Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick 'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Pit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Yo, what's good? It's Black Trey, and I got a show called Growing Up the Same with Jason Madison, where we talk to guests about their childhood memories that I'm sure everyone can relate to. You even get some life advice at the end. Our show has featured guests like Dom Kennedy, JJ Redick, Baron Davis, Brian Koppelman, Bomani Jones, Mina Kimes, and many more. Be sure to check us out on the Black Opinions Matter feed under the Count the Dings Network. Oh yeah, and don't forget to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe, rate, and review.
And also subscribe, rate, and review to the separate Growing Up the Same feed.
Hi everyone, Tim Kitzer here from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. And you're listening to Growing Up the Same with Trayvon Edwards and Jason Madison. Boom shakalaka. And now here's your starting lineup. Trayvon Edwards, Jason Madison. Boom shakalaka.
We have a special guest today. Like, I don't even know where to start, man. Like, you know, obviously I work on the basketball side, but like this is a special one for me. We have Earl the Pearl Monroe. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Nice to see you, man.
Man, nice to see you, man. For real. Like, and this is special because I know me being born in the 80s, always hear people talk about how good you were. Always hear people always in barbershops, especially young boy, you don't know nothing about this. So I'm gonna learn. It's gonna be a history lesson for me as well, and give you your flowers while you're still here.
Please.
Yes, absolutely. 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 So go ahead, Jason. Yeah.
Vernon Earl Monroe is an American former professional basketball player. He played for two teams, the Baltimore Bullets and the New York Knicks, during his career in the NBA. Both teams have retired Monroe's number. Due to his on-court success and flashy style of play, Monroe was given the nicknames Black Jesus and Earl the Pearl. Monroe was inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in 1990.
And now it's time for the one or the two with Jay Skills.
Rolls Royce or Bentley?
Rolls Royce.
Yeah. Aretha or Gladys?
Wow. I just heard neither one of us today. I'm still on Gladys.
Yeah. Stevie or Ray?
Stevie.
Marvin or Al Green?
Marvin.
Jazz or funk?
Funk.
Hip-hop or R&B?
R&B.
Malcolm or Martin?
Martin.
Shaq or Russell?
Oh, good one. For the old folks, Russell.
Jordan or LeBron?
Oh, Jordan.
The Knicks in the 70s or the Lakers in the 80s?
Knicks in the 70s.
The Bulls in the 90s or the Warriors from the 2010s?
Oh, the Bulls.
He Got Game or Hoop Dreams?
He Got Game.
Thomas Edison or Black Jesus?
Thomas Edison.
Earl Manigault or Pee Wee Kirkland?
Whoa, go with Pee Wee.
The Summer of Sam or the New York Blackout?
New York Blackout. I was in it.
You was in it? What was that like?
Oh, tough. We were walking down the street, you know, the car lights were on and walking with candles. It was eerie.
Crazy. Sammy Davis Jr. or Sidney Poitier?
Sammy Davis.
Myrtle Beach or Coney Island?
Myrtle Beach.
Grits with sugar or salt?
Don't eat grits.
Gumbo or jambalaya?
Gumbo without the andouille sausage.
Sausage, okay. Jerry West or Kobe?
Kobe.
Bill Bradley or Phil Jackson?
Bradley.
Kareem or Wilt?
Wilt.
Moses Malone or Clyde Frazier?
Clyde Frazier. You're going to be stabbed out here in New York.
The Phillies or the Yankees?
Oh, the Yankees.
Red Fox or Richard Pryor?
Richard Pryor.
Being in the Hall of Fame or having your jersey in the rafters at MSG?
Being in the Hall of Fame.
Philly or New York?
Philly.
Vaccine or no vaccine?
Vaccine.
Social media or no social media?
Social media.
Restaurants now or restaurants back in the day?
Restaurants back in the day.
Hank Aaron or Willie Mays?
Whew. Hank, say hey.
Tyson or Ali?
Ali.
Harlem or Brooklyn?
Harlem.
Cheesesteak or pizza?
Pizza. I don't eat meat.
Jefferson's or Sanford and Son?
The Jeffs.
Shaft or Superfly?
Good one. Shaft.
Coffee or Foxy Brown?
Foxy Brown.
Car Wash or The Wiz?
Car Wash.
The Mac or Dolomite?
Mac.
Good Times or What's Happening?
What's Happening.
Soul Train or American Idol?
Soul Train.
Baseball or football?
Baseball.
Playing in college or playing in the NBA?
Playing in college.
Playing in high school or playing in the park?
Playing in the park.
Sports in your era or sports right now?
Sports in my era.
Talking about the old days or talking about the future?
Talking about the future.
Playing on your favorite court or playing against your fiercest rival?
Playing against my fiercest rival.
Lemonade or iced tea?
Lemonade.
A relaxed Sunday or a busy Monday?
Relaxed Sunday.
2 p.m. or 2 a.m.?
10. I used to say every day was Friday, but I say 2 p.m.
And the last one, America in the 70s or America now?
America in the 70s.
Yeah. Why would you say that?
It's less complicated.
Okay.
You really knew who your enemies were.
Right. I can dig that. Well, that was the one of the two. Thank you, sir.
You know what I hate? After a long day of work, dealing with people, being stressed, got to figure out what to eat that night. I don't feel like cooking, but I don't want to eat something that's bad for me like junk food. I want something healthy. I want to eat something that tastes good, and I don't want to work too hard or pay too much to do it. Well, guess what? What you really want, if you're like me, is Freshly. That's right. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you got to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl. I love the chicken pesto bowl! Freshly can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. Now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every night and start living life Freshly. Your meals are always delivered fresh, never frozen, and are ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. With new meals added each week, Freshly brings the convenience of chef-made, nutritionist-designed classics right to your kitchen. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/BOM. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. That's freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. Do yourself a favor. Get Freshly.
Man, that was great. It was so many. That's the thing. He didn't make it difficult. Like a few of them, you know, I get it. It's kind of like the arm twisting ones, but like overall, you had your answers already on deck, man. This is cakewalk for you.
Well, spontaneity is what it's called.
There you go. There you go. Exactly. All right. Well, let's just jump right into it. Mr. Monroe, what is your connection to soccer growing up?
Well, I played soccer in junior high school. And back in those days, we were basically playing in sneakers. And when I got to high school, I made the high school team and played there and was all honorable mention, all city. And during my soccer days, I broke my ankle in my junior year. And I went to tell the coach, who was also a professional player, back in that day, Mr. Tatoya, I said, well, my senior year, I'm not going to play, soccer because I'm, playing basketball. And he said, well, I'm not going to give you a recommendation for college. So I kind of said, college, huh? Soccer, basketball, soccer, basketball. So I said, well, I don't think I'm going to college or soccer. So I said, well, I'll see you in, in with the alumni. So I went on and played basketball in that particular year. Thank goodness I went on and I made all city and led the city in scoring. But interestingly enough, out of the 3 years I was in high school, I only played varsity a year and a half. So that was a good move on my part.
Did you watch a lot of soccer growing up?
Yeah, I did. As a matter of fact, even afterwards, I was involved with, somewhat involved with like the Cosmos when they were here in the city and so forth and so on. And then after I retired, we started, I got into the agent business, and we were managing about 125 soccer players that were in the indoor soccer league. So, soccer's been a kind of big part of, my life all the way through.
Who was your favorite soccer player?
Well, Pelé.
Pelé, I was going to say, man, like that's a common answer. How I honestly started playing street soccer, honestly, Pelé. Young, but like Pelé's impact, again, just me seeing like little clips and stuff like that, early 90s, late 80s, more so was just kind of like every kid, you know what I mean? Especially, and he looked like us. So,
yeah.
I was like, oh, it's okay to play soccer and be black. Like, you know what I mean? Cause I'm from Compton too. So it's like, I grew in like a mixed neighborhood. Jason can attest to it. Like we have a lot of black and Mexican in our community. And when we growing up, you touch every sport until you find the one that actually sticks with you. And it's similar to how you said, which one was going to benefit you long-term.
No doubt. I had a conversation with him, when he was in town in the 70s. And, he had a nickname, they called him the Pearl. So I told him, since he was in New York, he had to get rid of that nickname. But that's me.
I'm the Pearl out here.
Hey, I'm the Pearl. I'm the only Pearl out here. Can't be two Pearls. Listen, I hear you. It could have been a Spanish Pearl something, man. The Brazilian Pearl something, man. All right, on the same line, what was your connection with baseball?
Well, I played baseball coming up. That was probably the first sport I played. And I got pretty good at baseball. Never played baseball as far as in school or whatnot. But, and it's soccer. I mean, like the soccer, you played only in industrial leagues and things of that nature. And strangely enough, I was a catcher. And I remember my last game, this is hardball. And I was catching, and I couldn't wear a mask because, it's a ghetto thing. So, the masks were like way heavy. So I couldn't wear the mask. Masks would make my head go down like this. So I was catching behind, people were looking at me, but I was a pretty good catcher. And my last game behind the plate, it was a foul tip went over, goes over your glove and hit me in the eyes. And I kind of shook that off and threw the ball back. And then I got back into it. And another foul tip came and hit me in the eye again. And I just took my shin guards, my chest protector and everything and left it right there at home plate. And I went out to first base. But I've always liked baseball. I can remember back in 1954, now talking years now. Our class in elementary school went to the library and we were able to see the Giants and Cleveland play in the World Series. And I saw the catch Willie Mays made over his shoulder. And that always stuck in my mind.
So you saw that live?
No, I didn't. Well, it was on TV.
I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And that always stuck in my mind. That's when that question came, Willie Mays or Aaron, I had to, wait for a second. And so I was a Willie Mays fan, but then I became, a Braves fan, Hank Aaron and Lou Burdette and Spahn and and all those other guys, Burton and all of, you know, and, you know, I was just a baseball guy. Even today, I'm a baseball guy. I can't watch nine innings.
Right. You know, yeah, I can't look at it. I can't watch nine innings either. You know what I mean? I think when you know what's crazy, being at a baseball game versus watching it, I think being at a baseball game is more easier to consume. You know what I mean? Because you got because you're involved. Obviously, yes, baseball games are long, but then you got beer, you got concession, you got all this stuff, and just the, you know, the camaraderie of being a sports fan versus watching, and the game never ends sometimes. Like, it can go all the way to 3 a.m. And that's the thing I've learned now living on the East Coast is watching sports on this side. Wait. I'm wrapping NBA games at like midnight. And I'm like, what is happening?
I couldn't believe it when I moved to New York and I was watching. I would go to the bar and the Laker game would be coming on at like 10:30, 11 o'clock. It's like a second half starting at like 12:30. I'm like, what is this? But it makes sense why people are in the bar, because it's like, out here, we're in the bar to just hang out and drink and party. Nobody's really watching the TV. Out in New York, in the bars, people are literally like watching the baseball game or basketball game at like 1 a.m., like drinking a beer.
Well, that's how it got to, you know, the old nickname is City That Never Sleeps.
Right. Yeah, for sure. For sure. The last one you gave us was music. What's your connection to music?
Well, like I said earlier, I was in the music business for about 35, 40 years almost. But back in the day, early on, a guy came to my house and he was introduced as my cousin by my other cousins. And his name was Solomon Burke. And so when I saw him, he came in and I went and told all the other kids and whatnot that, you know, Solomon Burke was in the house. And they wanted to come in and see him. I charged them money to come in and see him. So that was my first, you know, thing into music, you know. And Salva said, "You charging people to come in here to see me?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, well, you should do good later on in life. So I said, "I hope so." So, you know, that was like the beginning of everything. But, you know, I'm from Philly. I mean, when you think about Philadelphia, you think about, you know, Philadelphia sound, you think about, you know, Gamble and Huff, you know, all of, you know, the Stylistics, the Delphonics, you know, Billy Paul. I mean, you know, I went to school, my classmate was Patti LaBelle. So oh, I
wow.
remember
her. Wow. Wait. Wait, you just can't just drop that on us. That's a bar. You say Patti LaBelle is your classmate.
Yeah.
So y'all graduate the same year too?
Yeah, well, I don't think Patti graduated, but
okay. but yeah, y'all was in class.
She went on to make money. But yeah. Yeah, we were insane. I remember her you know, in our talent shows and things like that. And it's so funny because you know how she has this reputation of taking over a song and whatnot. And even in the talent shows, if the girl in her group couldn't hit the note, Patti put her to the side. And Patti came and sang the note for everybody. So,
OG diva.
Yeah, man. You know, it's amazing to have seen her then and see her progress through, you know, the LaBelle era and her era and so forth and so on. And it's just a great thing to see. So, you know, I'm from Philly and I know about the Philly sound. My brother-in-law managed the Intruders, and the Intruders, you know, made my most favorite record, which is called I'll Always Love My Mama. Mm-hmm. Because I always will and always do, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I hear that song and I get to another, you know, state euphorically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are so many guys that I touched base with. And even as a ball player, going around in the 60s and 70s and whatnot, you know, we travel basically the same routes as a lot of the entertainers, you know, the Motown people and so forth and so on. And we became friends. They come to games. We go to shows. So music was always in my blood. And I started to, when I came to New York, I met two guys named Albert and Arthur Allen, who became the Arlenes, and they were twins, and they had just come back from playing with Jimi Hendrix in Jimi Hendrix's last band. And after his death, they were in Europe, they came back. I started managing them and I started getting in the music business by taking records on the road with me, getting the records played at different, you know, stations across the country. And then I decided to do it myself. And that's how I got into the music business.
Wow. So you were kind of like A&Ring. Was this when you were a basketball player, when you were on traveling on the road, or this was after your career?
No, this is when I was with the Knicks. So, you know, we go to Cleveland, we know we see
DJ. That's hard.
I go to LA, we see a DJ there. I go to the station. I got records with me. You know, back in those days, I was working with Spring Records. We had artists like Millie Jackson, Joe Simon, Fatback Band, and stuff like that. And so then we, you know, just got locked in.
So did you start your own label? Did you start your own label?
Yeah, Pretty Pearl Records. And I had a kid named Curtis Haston, and we bumped out really good with him. And I was in business with a guy named Dick Scott, who was with Motown, and then he went over to CBS. And he had the New Kids on the Block and, you know, a couple other acts and whatnot. So, you know, it was cool.
What was your favorite part about being in the music business?
that 2 o'clock, 8 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, in the studio, man. And, you know, and a lot of the records that we did, you know, like I was on them. You know, I'm saying stuff in the background like, you know, and we sample those things and whatnot. And, you know, it's been, you know, really a great thing. I mean, people chastise me because, you know, I'm so music oriented and, you know, you should be doing something else and so forth. But, you know, music's in my blood.
Hey, you can't stop what's in your blood, straight up.
Don't let me find out this Earl the Pearl is ad-libbing on some...
Nah, that's all I'm about to check for. I'm just about to deep dive and find all ad-libs.
Yeah.
So you got a long list of nicknames, right? And obviously, you know, Jason had you choose between two. But you got Black Jesus, Black Magic, Duke of Earl, Earl the Pearl, The Pearl, and Thomas Edison. Out of all those, obviously the Pearl is associated with you the most, but which one was your first given to you?
First one was Duke of Earl. And I got that on the JV team in high school. And when I was playing and the people in the stands used to Duke of Earl. And that was my first lock, you know. And then, you know, there's some more that came up, but we can't say it on the air like this here.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good. I know. Hey, it's all good. Trust me. But that's killer to have the crowd chant to it. You went to the Winston-Salem State University. What made you choose that school out of all the schools? Or actually, first of all, how many other schools were recruiting you?
I don't know.
Okay, so you already had your heart sold on Winston?
No, I know everything I've done is really off key. So when I graduated from high school, my high school coach kept, you know, the letters that came in for me, and I didn't see any of them. So I didn't know if anybody was recruiting me. So I went to Temple Prep. And, you know, and trying to get ready to go maybe to a school. And while I was in Temple Prep back in those days, you know, freshmen on major labels, I'm really into the music, on major college campuses, they weren't able to play varsity ball until their second year. So we played in Temple Prep, we played against the freshman teams of all these different, you know, big five schools from Villanova to St. Joe's, all the ones, Penn and all those here in the area. And I was killing these guys. So I said, well, shoot, I'm going to drop out and I'm going to play in the ABL, which was a old, you know, league before the ABA. And just as I was going to try out for the ABL, the league folded. So that kind of left me out there. So I just went to work in a knitting mill in Philadelphia, Philadelphia Knitting, as a matter of fact. And while I was there, I was playing in the playgrounds, you know, different leagues around the city. And a guy saw me play, who was from Winston-Salem, he had graduated, and he came up to me and asked me if I wanted to go to Winston-Salem. And I had never heard of Winston-Salem before.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here from Cinephobe. Yeah, that podcast. It's a good one. Ascertain. Telling you right now, Prize Picks, that's the way to go. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million members. The easiest and most exciting way to play DFS is just you against the numbers. You pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. It's demon time. That's right. You're asking, what does that mean? It's demon time. I'll tell you. Demons and Goblins, the newest and most exciting way to play at Prize Picks. Squares marked with red demons or green goblins get you different payouts. You can now win up to 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. That's insane. That's insane of Prize Picks to do. You know what else is insane? They offer injury insurance so that your entries stay in play, even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, that player projection won't count against you, and the rest of your entry stays alive. Prize Picks is the only DFS platform with an injury insurance policy. And by the way, they now offer Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account. This football, basketball, any season you're playing. Me personally, I'm taking more than points on Joel Embiid all the time. I'm taking more than assists on Tyrese Halliburton. I'm taking less than points on Jordan Poole. Those seem to be the easy money makers for you. And you're probably wondering, Zach, how do I get involved in this? You go to prizepicks.com/ding and use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/ding. Use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Hello, listener. Have you ever used ButcherBox? I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to be a butcher. I used to work at an unnamed grocery store. I used to be that tall man behind the counter in your neighborhood, cutting up meat and preparing seafood for you. And I know that it can be a stressful situation. I know that it can be crowded. You have to wait your turn. You have to know what you want. You feel rushed. Sometimes you might think that your butcher has a bad attitude. I don't know. Happened to a friend. Couldn't possibly be me. But that's why I love ButcherBox. ButcherBox brings you peace of mind. You can easily find high quality beef, chicken, pork that you can trust is humanely raised. There's no antibiotics or added hormones. There's the ultimate convenience of not having to deal with butchers or the crowded meat counter after a long day at work. It's delivered right to your doorstep. There's always free shipping and there's incredible value. You're getting really high quality products at an amazing value. You get exclusive member deals. You get recipe inspiration, guides, hacks. A little hack from my butcher experience. The petite top sirloin, which is about half the price of the New York steak, is a very similar cut with a fat cap on one side. And you get very good tenderness out of the petite sirloin. If you've ever been to a Brazilian steakhouse and you see them talking about picanha, that's the petite sirloin. With ButcherBox, I'm always prepared. I always have meat on deck for a grill and chill, a cookout, or just making dinner at home. And I'm saving a ton of money from shopping at the grocery store all the time. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's great, but what's my reward for signing up for ButcherBox? Well, I'm glad you asked, because if you sign up at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, you will get free ground beef for life. For life. Enough ground beef to fill the Nile, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/dings.
So I said, no, I'm gonna, you know, just chill out and see what I could do. So about 2 or 3 months later, making $1.15 an hour, and if I missed the day, I was bringing home $27.50. He came and asked me again. He said, "You want to go to Winston-Salem?" I said, You know, I'll go if my man could go with me. And he said, well, I'll get back to you. So he came back and said, well, Coach Gaines said that, you know, you both of you could come. So.
Yo, you real for that. You looked out for the homie. You got the homie right out of Philly. And also, I understand that going to a place that probably you've never visited in anything by yourself, handling, at least you have somebody to have your back through those times.
Yeah. And, you know, I had never even been south. I had been to Washington once on a class trip, but, you know, I'd never been south. So it was, you know, kind of a complete shock going down through, you know, in Virginia. And in Washington, we had to get off the train and move to the back, to a back car. So that was first of all, that was strange to be, you know, being it from Philadelphia. And looking at the cotton fields and whatnot as we're on the train getting down there. And, you know, strangely enough, our coach, Coach Gaines, never saw us. He never saw me play. He didn't know anything about me except for my name. And so we thought we were going out on a scholarship. We didn't realize that we were really going down to see if we could make the team. And we got down there and, you know, obviously he saw something he liked. And so, you know, if he's going to keep me, he's going, hey, I have to keep my man. So he kept us both and we took our SATs down there. We settled in with the football team who was in practice before the semester and so forth and so on. So it was a pretty traumatic kind of situation. And we had to do work aid, you know, because we had to pay our way.
Right.
So we had to do work aid. So my first semester I did work aid. And my man had to mop half the gym. I mopped the other half. And that was our work aid. And after my first semester, after I kind of showed out a little bit, I stopped doing the work.
They put you on scholarship.
Hey, they slid that scholarship as fast as they possibly could to you. Hey, I know about that journey for sure, man. Like, I love basketball so much, man. I bounced around from school to school until I finally found a home. And it definitely wasn't like pretty, but I'm grateful for the grind. I'm grateful for the journey and the friendships I made. But like hearing your story is definitely inspiring. And I hopefully our young listeners hear it, because a lot of kids are D1 or bust, you know, or, you know, it's just a different viewpoint on how the game is viewed, you know, like, oh, if I don't get no D1 scholarship, I'm not playing. Not knowing like it's different paths you can take.
There's so many different ways.
Yeah.
Before you ask this question, Jason, I wanted to ask, since HBCUs are now, you know, getting resurging, how do you feel about that?
I feel really good about it. I mean, obviously, you know, having gone there and received the nurturing and whatnot that you get at HBC, you know, it's really, I think more Black kids need to experience that. It's interesting that when I finish this, I'm doing an interview with the New York Post because they saw Chris Paul in a Winston-Salem jersey.
I actually seen you quote retweet that saying, you know, like right on. Yeah. So, you know? Yeah.
And that's like, oh, okay. Well, you know, if you realize what's going on with that is that Chris Paul is in classes at Winston-Salem now.
Oh, wow. He's
from Winston-Salem, obviously. Mm-hmm. His parents went there. His brothers went there to Winston-Salem State, and he went to Wake Forest. And you know, I knew his grandfather who had the gas station up the street. You know, when I was in school and things like that. But now, you know, because he wore this jersey, you know, even more emphasis is put on HBCUs. And this guy wants to know why he's wearing the jersey. And I want to tell him why he's wearing the jersey, because it's the right thing to do, you know. And if in any other kind of situation, he would have gone to Winston-Salem, because back in the day, those opportunities weren't available to, you know, a lot of Black guys.
Squeaky doors, clogged sinks, finicky engines. When things break down around the house, you take care of it. However, when something's off in the bedroom, Just try not to think about it. Nothing. I was just tired. I'm just stressed a little bit. Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. And if you do, you'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, if you get started today, you'll save $15 on your first order of ED treatment.
Yeah, I was going to ask you too, like you said, you had to sit in the back of the train car coming there. What was the racial climate like at that time from you leaving high school, I guess, all the way through your NBA career, the civil rights movement? How were you interacting with all that?
Well, I was a Martin Luther King person.
Yeah.
So, listening to his, to him speak, it motivated me. And when I went to school, down there, I remember he came to speak in April of 64. And Winston-Salem. I wasn't able to get to see him. And the next thing I know, in 68, he's assassinated. And, I always felt bad that I wasn't able to ever get to see him live. But for me, I used to, is a book called This Banner of Man by Lerone Bennett. And in it, it has all his speeches and things of that nature. And I used to read that book before games. And, the speeches, and get pumped up, especially when I got into pros in Baltimore. And, it kind of set a tone for me. I wore my red, black, and green and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't the average kind of guy, especially when you think in terms of a guy coming into a league that had quotas. Could only be six black guys on this team, since he was 12, at least that, So, I was into it. I did my protesting, I guess, more silently because kind of like, that's the kind of person I am. I'm not like a gregarious type of person and whatnot, but, I believe in what I believe in. And I think that from high school, going through college, seeing in the South, seeing what those things were doing to our folks, because we only, in Philadelphia, we only had visions of dogs and water hoses, on folks in the South. And so being in the South and then being able to see it up close and personal, it kind of changed my life. It kind of changed my viewpoint and how I perceived where I was going and what I was going to do. And I guess the main thing I always wanted to do is be a role model, so to speak, for kids. Try and have the image, because, hey, you might not be the best person in the world, but if people don't know it, you are, So, it's what you do, so that people can see what you do and makes you who you are. And I don't want people to be like me, but they can see that they can be whatever they want to be, just be good. And that's kind of how I've led, not only through high school, junior high school, so forth, and into the college and into the pros, but even after the pros. And fortunately, we've got a school, the Earl Monroe New Renaissance basketball school that's going to be opening up in September.
So I just heard about that, and I was just talking to some kids 2 days ago, 15 and under group, coached by my man Corey Underwood. And he was like, I was like, yo, I'm about to actually talk to Earl in a couple of days. You know what I mean? It's like, yo, you know, like tell him da da da. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I'll bring it up for sure. You mentioned it. So that's awesome. You had a signature shoe with Jordache. How did that come about?
Well, they needed a real good a spokesperson. And, you know, I had just retired. And interestingly enough, I was a a pony guy, but I couldn't wear the pony shoes. So what I did was I had them make the pony tops and put it on the Adidas last, so that the shoe was basically an Adidas shoe with the pony tops. So I finished with my obligation with pony and was introduced to the people with Jordache. And Jordache was stylish. I mean, they had the Jordache shoes and the jeans and so forth. And, you know, they were just a more progressive type of company. And so I decided to go ahead and try and get involved with them. And it was a good run. I really enjoyed it.
Trey, you remember when ponies came back in our era?
Yeah, I remember the ponies. They signed Wilson Chandler. Yeah, Wilson Chandler had a signature shoe, and Nipsey Hussle had a pair.
Yeah. Crazy. Earl, I was going to ask you, so obviously you played in one of the greatest, you know, basketball eras of all time. You played against some of the greatest players of all time. Who was the best player that you ever played against on the basketball court, and why was it Will Chamberlain?
So you know. Well, Will, you know, Will was just the best, man. I mean, you know, I it's not taking anything from all the other players that played the game, but Will, you know, you look down and you talk about records, you know, he still has about 60 or 70 records on the books.
Yep.
You know, he established the three-second lane. He established that as something. He established the fact that you had to stay behind the free throw line, you know, when you shoot a free throw, because when he was started, he was just jumping from the free throw line and dunking.
Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah, so there's so much that he did. He changed the whole spectrum in terms of the pay scales and whatnot in the NBA. And he was just a guy. Now, when I was young and I first started, I used to sit, you know, in the playgrounds when they played. And you kind of, you know, you never played, but you hoped that somebody would pick you. And you're on the fence, you got your legs crossed, and you're seeing all these great players, you know, that play in the NBA, because back in those days, those guys played on the playgrounds.
Right.
So you see Will going out, and you just be hoping somebody would say, "Hey Earl, you want to get in as a fifth? Come on in as a fifth." You know, never happened, of course. But you know, I remember seeing him growing up with him, and then playing against him, partying with him. You know,
what was that like?
The whole thing. But you know, Will was always a guy that no matter what you did, he did it better. That was Will. You know, you tell him that you did something. Well, hey, as he was saying, Pearl, I, you know what I did? You know, he'll come and tell you what he did.
Yeah.
So, you know, but you know, he was just a guy that had a tremendous body. He high jumped. You know, he was running track. He was going to box Ali, and you know, he was a guy that if he was that person today, the way social media and all everything, it'd be no stopping him in any.
Right. Yeah.
And the fact that he was such a good guy. I mean, he knows he didn't bid no 20,000. You know?
Hey, but it was a good conversation straight up.
That's one of the greatest lies ever told.
But I also want to know, since you were playing in this era, and the 100 points.
Wow. Well, that was before me, but
before
I thought about this.
Okay.
So that 100 points, I mean, he got against the Knicks playing somewhere in Pennsylvania. It was like, it wasn't a regular gym that, you know, that Sixers, you know, they played at. And if someone was to say they were there, it only sat maybe 1,800, maybe 2,000 people, but you would get maybe 30,000, 40,000 people say they were there. You know, that's what kind of game it was. And in that game, my good friend Guy Rogers, you know, the guy had so many assists. You know, they stopped giving him assists on the game.
So realistically, Guy Rogers would have the most assists
ever.
Okay, shout out to Guy Rogers, man. Because I know a lot of people. Obviously, we were around for Kobe's 81, and social media, it's kind of hard to even fathom someone even scoring that many points in an NBA basketball game. But mostly people say, where's the footage? Where's exactly. The footage? You know what I mean? We only see like the picture of him holding up the sheet with the 100, you know? Right. So it's always debated and things like that. But like you mentioned, it's a small gym and probably was just like one of them games where you're just like,
right.
You know, it's just Wilt versus the Knicks and not really thinking about how the flow of it was going to be.
After seeing Kobe's 81, I can see how it can happen. You know, like if Kobe could score 81 and he missed a few shots, he probably could have scored 85 or 90 that day. Like Wilt was towering over everybody and his skill was so much more than everybody else. They just threw him the ball in deep and he just drops it in there.
Well, it was a difference. You know, Kobe could dribble the ball and come and take his shots. But Wilt had to get the ball
You
know, from somebody. You know, he wasn't about dribbling. And there was a guy named Paul Harrison who was an all-star player, you know, back in the day. And Paul had to retire because Wilt would just take his shots, take them out the air, and got them in. And that was his 2 points instead of Paul's.
That is crazy. Who is your toughest matchup?
Well, Clyde was a tough matchup, you know, for me, and Tiny Archibald, because Tiny, you know, you do something to Tiny, and Tiny running right back at you, you know, and up your legs, and he was a real tough competitor. There was another guy out in Kansas City, gosh, I can't think of his name right now, but he was tough because he was hard, and I can't, I just saw him the other day. But, you know, here's the difference in those type of players. Tiny was fast, smaller, and he could get up underneath you, and he could do a lot of things. First of all, that makes it hard for you. Clyde was another guy. He was the same size, but he had good hands, and, you know, most of his stuff was like swiping the ball from behind. They had good team defense, which led you into certain areas. But this guy, I can't think of his name. Also, he was just strong. He was like a horse, and you just couldn't do anything. You know, you couldn't move him. You know, you couldn't fake him. You know, if you fake him, he'd still be in the same position. You know, and so you know you had to either just hit him on the run. Or, you know, you had to devise something else in which you could try and get something off on him. But, you know, I enjoyed those days of playing against those guys in our league because I feel as though it was a golden era of basketball. You know, it was breaking out from the standard pass and shoot until it got to a point now you're doing one-on-one, you're doing shake and bake, you're doing all the other stuff. The league was changing and what the league has done was done from that point is what it's gotten to be today. You know, with the 3 points, which is what I hate I hate how they spread the floor for the three-pointer, because, you know, the game itself is more of a knowledgeable game, if you could think.
It's take what you can give, right?
Yeah, but yeah. You know, if you, okay, right now you got the game that spreads out. You got the guy that breaks the defense down. He comes in, instead of shooting his layup that he can shoot,
he passes out. Right,
you know. Now, if you remember the Clipper game, and they would come in and pass the ball out, you know who can't shoot is going to be open.
Always open. You open for a reason.
Right. So Beverly was open in the corners. You know, he made a couple shots, but most of the time, he was open for that shot.
Right.
Him and Rondo.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, for real.
So, you know, I think, you know, when I think about the three-pointer, I think in terms of you don't need a three-pointer until you really need the three-pointer. Mm-hmm. So why not go and get your sure shot?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that a lot of guys are going back to the mid-range and it's starting to find its way back into the game a little bit more. I know most want to argue and say analytics, but no, I just think that the stuff that people kind of model their game around, you know what I mean? And like what they've seen, because this most of the defense sagged and protect the paint more than anything. Yeah. So it's three are key. By majority of basketball players in the game. And then you have those, though I call them series killers, who are able to make a living off mid-range, you know, because it's there. Chris Paul's one of them, Devin Booker, you know, Kevin Durant still takes them, you know, Damian Lillard. Yeah. I mean, you can go down the line with most guys that take them, and obviously Michael and Kobe lived that hard too, hanging by the line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Middleton takes a lot of
twos. Kawhi, Middleton, yep. DeMar DeRozan. I mean, the list goes on, the guys, but like the more and more I think as it loosens up and, you know, coaches take the straps off of players and allow them to play their type of game, I think it'll come back a little bit more. But it starts with that. One of the questions I had, I know you see, well, I see a lot of your game in Magic, but do you see any current player that has like that reminds you of yourself? That like your game has just translated on to the next era?
Well, let me say it like this. Before I got here, they didn't play like this. Once I got here.
Look, don't be humble. Get it off.
Then they start playing like this.
Go in, Earl. Go in.
This is everything is kind of an offshoot of things that I did. I mean, I wasn't doing it flying, dunking and whatnot, but all the other stuff spinning off the backboard, the one-on-ones started with me, you know, because it was called just teams set up to play me. They try to, you know, because they knew I was isolating.
So you would see a lot of boxing ones sometimes?
Oh, well, I had a lot of that when I was in college. I mean, I scored 41 points a game in college, so you know, I had a lot of that.
So you basically Mr. ISO.
Go ahead, Trey.
No, I was just calling him Mr. ISO. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty much what you was. You was out there just wheeling and dealing, as Clyde was saying.
No, but I see the game has progressed. I mean, obviously, you know, every generation takes the game to another level. And the game itself today, I like the game the way it was played back in the day. I mean, if I was my druthers, I'd like to see it because there was a lot more thought in the game. But, you know,
we're getting that bad weather. It's mutual. I got the same thing.
So, but you can't take away from what the guys are doing today. I mean, it's really unbelievable, you know, the way the guys are playing today. And, you know, I take my hat off to them and as they progress and as they continue to make the money and continue to do the things that are necessary and standing up for things that, you know, guys weren't able to stand up for before in terms of social justice and things of that nature.
For sure. So, obviously, you were mentioned in the film He Got Game. Spike Lee, you know, dedicated a scene to you and your amazingness on the basketball court. What was that like? Did Spike call you before he started filming the movie? What was that whole process interaction like for you?
Well, I was in the airport and I was going to catch a flight. And I see Spike and he said, "Oh, Earl, come here, I want to talk to you about." And I said, and I go over there and we start talking. And all of a sudden I look up and, you know, my flight is leaving shortly. And I look up, I'm at the wrong gate. So as he's explaining it to me, I said, "This is bad. I got to talk to you later, man. I got to go catch my flight." So later on, he called and, you know, we kind of talked about it and so forth and so on. And that he was basing his character, Jesus Shuttleworth, on Black Jesus. And so, that's cool. And then he had a part about, Denzel telling his son about, you know, about Black Jesus or whatever. And that's the reason why he named his son that, because Earl Monroe did this, he came in. And it was kind of right. I mean, you know, obviously I you know, when I was in Baltimore, I came to New York, I'm averaging like 23, 24 points a game. And then next year I'm averaging 11. So there's a lot of sacrifices to be done. But, you know, again, you know, when you think about all, you know, are you able to make that kind of sacrifice? You know, some people are not able to do it, you know, because right. It's a big, you know, departure from your whole personality. And even for me in doing it, it made me a different kind of player. It made me a different type of person. And I guess, you know, some for the good, some for the bad. But at least understanding and knowing and your knowledge of the game, knowing what to do and how to do it in order to win. That's what you know, was the determining factor.
Nice. So as a Knicks guy, right, did the Knicks make a mistake trading Mark Jackson in 1991? That was a personal question from a friend that wanted to know that. Shout out to Rich Kleiman. He's the one who asked. So, yeah.
Well, did he go to Indiana?
I think he went to LA. I think he went to Clippers. Did he go to Clippers?
No, he played on the Pacers in the mid 90s.
But this is 91. I think they sent him to the Clippers. So like, let me see. Okay. Let me make sure.
Well, you know, I think Rod Strickland was there. They thought that they could work with Rod Strickland.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mark played a heck of a role here because nobody really expected him to be Rookie of the Year when he came out.
Yeah, they sent him to the Clippers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he understood the game. See, one of the things about players, when you have players who understand the game, that's why Chris Paul, you know, they're talking about him so much now, because he's a kid that understands the game. And he understands the players around him, and he makes those guys better. So, yeah, Mark, you know, it was a tough situation because they had two guards. You know, now they had Mark, and now they just drafted a Rod Strickland, who was a heck of a player in itself. So, you know, it was different, and they had to make that decision. I don't like the fact that he left, but I knew they had to make that decision.
Yeah, for sure. The last question I had, watching the Knicks now, what do you think they need to do offseason? Should they target a point guard, or, you know, should they keep the team as is? What are you thinking as Earl Pearl Monroe, the GM?
You know, I would try and keep all these guys that they have and try to build, you know, get a couple more guys, because as you saw, even in their last games and whatnot, you know, they sat Peyton, and he was no good for them after they sat him. So you have to find somebody that's going to come in and be that point guard that you need. Now, you know, quickly they have, they're looking for him to be that person, but you're still going to need another guy, at least at this point, who understands the game. Peyton understands the game. You know, he might not have all the tools and whatnot, but he's a guy that understands the game. Secondly, they're going to need another shooter, another guy that's going to be out there. But again, you remember they played without Mitchell Robinson for the latter part of the season and still made the playoffs and played very well. So, you know, they've got a lot of decisions to make, but I would certainly think that they need another shooting forward.
They need to get Dame.
As well as the point guard.
He said go get Dame. Here you go, man.
I keep hearing that. I keep hearing that. Hey, man. But I think Dame is going to go somewhere else.
What would it be to New York City to land a point guard like Damian Lillard? Like I'm saying, if he wound up in New York City, how big would that be for the franchise?
That'd be great big.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's not winning a chip. You won a chip. So, you know, that's a different thing, but it's close to it as far as bringing that right swing to it, right?
Well, you know, first of all, here's a city that hasn't really experienced a lot in the last decade or so. You know what I mean? So, you know, certainly bringing him in is going to get you a lot closer. And, you know, I'm upset that they didn't take the shot with Durant because, you know, Durant was a guy that, first of all, you know, even though he had that injury, his game is not predicated on being a bully or whatever up underneath or not. His game is finesse. And you saw in this season that he's been able to play, you know, his game is predicated on getting that ball, shooting the ball from wherever and making it happen. And he could do it and he can make everybody else better. They just had a tough year, I think, when you think in terms of all the people that they had and bringing other people. I thought that they were a good team when I saw them at the beginning of the year and they had Dinwiddie. I thought they were a winning team with Dinwiddie because Dinwiddie is a guy that's going to come and get his and play. He's going to come out and play.
Yo, Spence is my guy. Spence is my guy. He's on the road to recovery. I would love him as a starting point guard for the Knicks. He would crack. He would crack, yo.
He's going to go somewhere. I mean, I don't know if they're going to keep him there, but he's going to go somewhere.
Yeah, he wants to get paid, so I don't see him staying.
Yeah.
Jason, you good?
I'm good, my G.
All right, so we got one last question to send you off because I know you're a busy man. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
Let's see. Okay. I think I would say to Earl Monroe at 18 to go with your own feelings. Go with what you feel is going to be good for you. So many times, you know, you do things that's good for everybody else, but do what's good for you, and that will make everybody else happy. Simple, but maybe selfish, but
I think it's more of the most honest advice you possibly could give yourself. For real.
I wish I would have back in the day.
for real. Man, this has been an amazing episode. Before I close out, I just want to dedicate this episode to my late uncle, Bruce Jones, who passed away a couple of days ago. Big basketball fan, put the ball in my hand. And Earl, man, hopefully we can stay in contact. Man, this has been a pleasure, man. A dream, actually.
For real.
Hey, well, I appreciate it. And, you know, one of the things that we didn't talk about and whatnot is that, man, you know, I still feel Kobe around. And, you know, he's, you know, whenever I see these promos and I see it, you know, I feel like I've lost my own son. And, you know, maybe next time we'll talk, you know.
I'm always welcome to the conversation, honestly, man. I know you busy, man, and definitely we could have a whole different basketball conversation and everything else, man. Definitely rest in peace, Kobe, man. Kobe's definitely felt for sure.
Two LA kids, man. Like, we definitely, Trey's got Kobe's number tatted on.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I literally got his numbers tattooed on me. Like, you know what I mean?
I won some signed shoes from him from Nike in like 2010. I've been I wasn't even a Laker fan my whole life, but I've been a Kobe fan since he came into the league, man. And, you know, that loss, like you said, it's tough to think about and tough to deal with just as a human, as a basketball fan, as a black man, it's just crazy, man. I just, you know, pray for his family and, you know, all of that.
No doubt.
Growing up the same wins the game.